2022 is off to a romantic start for Megan Fox and Machine Gun Kelly. They're engaged. The 35-year-old actress and the 31-year-old musician announced their happy news in a pair of swoon-worthy Instagram posts on Wednesday, with Megan revealing a video of her groom-to-be's proposal. The mom of three shared that MGK popped the question earlier this week at a special location and that they celebrated the occasion with an unconventional toast.
All right, everybody, we're going to talk about Megan Fox. We're going to talk about Machine Gun Kelly. We're going to talk about the occult ritual that it was or is their engagement. Maybe some people thought this was just some run-of-the-mill proposal. Not in my world. Not in the world of pop culture meets paranoid conspiracy theories. Today we're going to talk about different concepts within ritual magic, why they're drinking each other's blood, the occult twin flames, Kali, the goddess of destruction. What are they going to do? What are these people going to do? But yeah, you know, we talk about pop culture stuff all the time, and this one crossed my radar, so of course, we're going to cover it, you know? I'm a big Machine Gun Kelly fan, so don't think this is me trying to pick on these two. If I'm not mistaken, in my 2020 wrap-up show, I said he had the best album of the year, and I stand by that. But we're going to talk about Megan Fox and Machine Gun Kelly. I'm trying a new thing. I'm going to try to do the recording of this show on TikTok Live. Why not? I don't know. So if you don't follow me on TikTok, follow me, because maybe you'll catch someday me recording a show live on the TikTok. Now, okay, let me back up here. Let's talk about what exactly happened. In case you didn't know, or if you don't know who these people are, we're going to cover all of it. Megan Fox, very famous actress, right? She was in the Transformers movies. She was in the horror movie Jennifer's Body, which was pretty good. Machine Gun Kelly, a very famous rapper turned pop punk. Well, anyway, they hooked up. And on Megan Fox's Instagram, she posted this. And I'm going to read to you right from her Instagram. In July of 2020, we sat under this banyan tree. We asked for magic. We were oblivious to the pain we would face together in such a short, frenetic period of time. Unaware of the work and sacrifices the relationship would require from us, but intoxicated off of the love and the karma. Somehow, a year and a half later, having walked through hell together and having laughed more than I ever imagined possible, he asked me to marry him. And just as in every lifetime before this one, and as in every lifetime that will follow it, I said yes. And then we drank each other's blood. January 11, 22. Which is written 1.11.22. You know? Now, here's the thing. There's a lot to unpack here. I can't help but think there's some elements of Hinduism involved here. Hinduism, of course, the religion, the majority religion of India. The banyan tree, of course, the national tree of India. But she references karma here, which obviously part of Hinduism. She mentions rebirth, the rebirth cycles, when she says that they're going to spend every lifetime before this one and every lifetime that will follow together. And she says that they walked through hell together. So I see the elements of Hinduism here. And Kali is, of course, a goddess in Hinduism. And she is known for drinking blood. Just like Megan Fox says these two did together. In fact, Kali drinks the blood of the sacrifices. Sacrifices to, and there's like a Kali goddess and a Kali demon. You know, if you want to split hairs on it, I'm not a theologian on Hinduism. but she's talking about drinking blood, and Kali, the Hindu goddess or demon, also drinks blood of the sacrifices, which is a term she uses in the text. Now, to be fair, she says that unaware of the work and sacrifices the relationship would require from us, which, you know, clearly that's not talking about blood sacrifice. So let's just be clear about that. We don't want to get too crazy. I mean, we want to get crazy, but not too crazy. Kali's also seen, she's the one holding the skulls. She's like the goddess of destruction and death. And she's considered one of the greatest of the tantric deities. She possesses the female sexual powers, which was very much Megan Fox's role in pop culture, right? She was an early sex symbol of the 2000s when the Transformers 1 movie came out. And of course, you know, drinking the blood, that's also a very vampiric idea. Machine Gun Kelly's been walking around with Megan Fox's blood in a vial around his neck. They all seem to do it. Remember Angelina Jolie and Billy Bob Thornton did all this stuff. But in my first Alien book, Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, Use Illusion 1, available on Amazon and Audible, signed copies on Gumroad, gumroad.com/IsaacW, we talked about the occult history in the value of blood as an energetic sacrifice to the gods. And when you get into this idea, like the reason we were sort of picking on the Hinduism, like Hindu had this sort of looking at the, I'm going to mispronounce it, the Mahabharata or whatever that's called. There was all these flying sky gods. And that's what half of the ancient alien theory is based upon. These gods out in the sky traveling around. And in Use Your Illusion 1, I talked about how historically a lot of these cultures conducted ritual blood sacrifices to these gods in the sky. All right. So drinking the blood fits in line with that idea of blood as a sacrifice. The quality of the blood. Because in the book, I talked about how they use the jade, which is green, to symbolize the ripe or the unripened blood. A child would have the purest blood. That's why it made for the best sacrifice. Same goes for a virgin. So you would sacrifice your best to the gods. So, of course, there's this element, and that was kind of the biggest headline of this whole thing, was drinking blood. They're drinking each other's blood. So there's a lot of occult ideas buried within that. And, of course, Kali, this goddess of Hinduism, is known for drinking blood. Also, Kali, the goddess of destruction, and you think of CERN, right? They got the statue out front. They did that dance of destruction several years ago. But my big concern, more so than the blood drinking and all this other stuff, is that to these occultists, they want to bring about the final age of man. They want to bring about the end of humanity and bring about this new age. And Kali Yuga is the last of the cycles ruled by the demon Kali. All right. And we talked about this again in Use Your Illusion 1, but we talked about this specifically when I interviewed Professor Ben Teitelbaum about his book War for Eternity. Because when I read that book, it's all about Steve Bannon and how he subscribes to some of these ideas from these philosophers like René Guénon, who subscribe to this idea that they need to accelerate the final age of man to the Kali Yuga, the fourth and final cycle. They want to accelerate this process. So are they, the handlers, promoting this and making it energetically bring about a new age, closing the cycle on the previous age and introducing the Kali Yuga? Now, if you want to get into Kali and the occult, you can't skip over the topic of Tantra, all right? Tantra is used by occultists such as Kenneth Grant, Aleister Crowley, to magically use the energy from sex. You know, they call it sex magic because it's some of the most powerful energy that a magician could use, or so I'm told, right? I don't know. So I read. And in this left-hand path occult variety of tantric sex, they use the sex magic energy to get into the mauve zone, the dark side of the Kabbalistic tree of life, where they can make contact with these demons. Why would you want to do it? I don't know. Don't ask me. I'm not the one doing this stuff, okay? But Tantra is supposed to unlock a lot of these magical abilities, according to these occultists. And if you want to go deep into this subject, Peter Lavenda wrote a book called The Dark Lord, and I've got some notes here, right? And this is mostly me paraphrasing. I'll tell you what, this is, and it goes deep. Oh my God, it goes so deep. I don't know what half the crap he's talking about. It's intense. But there's a section where it talks about how Tantra forms. And again, I don't know, I don't want to, what do you call it, libel or whatever. I took notes, and I don't know if this was me typing the exact words or me paraphrasing it. So, you know, whatever. But in my notes, I wrote, Tantra forms the main context for Grant's elaboration of the sexual mysteries at the heart of Thelema and Thelemic magic. And that is the religion Aleister Crowley started, right? Thelema. When I was picking on Dave Navarro, it's because he's got the Unicursal Hexagrams tattooed on his elbows. Is he an adherent of Thelema? I don't know. He didn't admit that to me when I went on his show. So Tantric forms the main context for Grant's elaboration of the sexual mysteries at the heart of Thelema. And Grant went much further than Crowley in his description of these mysteries and their relevance to Tantra. In particular, the Vama Marg Tantra, or Tantra of the Left-Hand Path. And what they're talking about there is there's different flavors of Tantra. There's the one Sting does, the, you know, eternally build up energy before you nut or whatever. But then there's this Tantra of the Left-Hand Path, and the Left-Hand Path is a separation from God. It's man becoming God in a way. They call it antinomianism. It's to go against the stream of consciousness that is God and to find your own path. A rebel, right? A rebel. We'll call it that. So in this sort of rebellious tantra, it says here, Grant's tantra is not the New Age feel-good tantra of the West, which is what probably most of us think of, right? But it's the transgressive tantra of the Nath Siddhis, the Kaula circles and other traditions that view the human body, male and female, as both laboratories and temples combined. Tantra, according to this approach, is a technology of spirituality, spiritual power, and tremendously altered states of consciousness, which has as its goal communion with supramundane beings. In other words, precisely what Lovecraft described when he depicted the orgiastic rites in the swamps outside New Orleans in his short story, The Call of Cthulhu. As I read that, I think that's probably Lavenda's writing. That's way too smart for me. But anyway, he's talking about Lovecraft and the Call of Cthulhu, which is a story about how they magically resurrect Cthulhu from the depths through ritual magic and orgies and sex magic. So making contact with the Klepoth, the demons in the dark side of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. Now, look, you probably came here for Megan Fox and Machine Gun Kelly, and I'm talking to you about swamp sex to raise demons. So we're going to wrap it up here. But the idea here is that Aleister Crowley and Kenneth Grant, these occult bad boys, they worshipped Satan or Set, or the energies and the archetypes that is Satan or Set, the Egyptian god. And they thought Set was the one that could offer access to these other dimensions. And Tantra, this, what was it called? The Vama Marg, left-hand path Tantra, coupled with the Western magic practices they were doing, would allow and facilitate the magician to make contact with the dark side of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. Basically, open up a portal to another dimension to make contact with demonic spirits. Because these magicians are trying to gain knowledge, understanding, power, wisdom from anything. Demons or angels, they don't care. Black magic, white magic. To these particular occultists, it doesn't matter. Now, here's another idea which I found disturbing. If you want to go down this road of believing that Megan Fox is consciously or subconsciously employing these energies of Kali, the goddess of destruction and death in Hinduism, I'm going to read to you from my first alien book, Use Illusion 1. Looking at the new messiah called the Maitreya would lead some of the... Okay, so let me back up. Maybe I won't. This is probably jumping in. I was preparing my notes and I see the folly in that. So to some of these occultists, like Helena Blavatsky, she's one of those old-timey occultists, right? She talked about this in her book, The Secret Doctrine, right? This prophecy of the end times. The Kali Yuga, and about how there would be this ascended master who would come down to facilitate it, right? It's called the Maitreya. And this, of course, is the Antichrist. Or, as Blavatsky puts it, the final world teacher. The master of all ancient wisdom, right? Coming in to usher the new age and enlighten everyone. The ultimate final enlightenment. And, of course, what's the enlightenment? It's the Gnostic wisdom, the gnosis, the truth about our world, which to these people, the truth is inverted. What's good is bad, and what's bad is good. Satan is God. That's the gist of it. But in User Illusion 1, I talk about the Kali Yuga. You know, and we don't need to go deep into that. That's a lot of detail there, but know that the Maitreya is also thought to possess this green emerald, which came from the crown of Lucifer. When Lucifer fell from the heavens, a green emerald jewel dropped. And that's associated with the Maitreya. And you probably know where I'm going with it. But if you looked at the engagement ring between Megan Fox and Machine Gun Kelly, it's got a massive emerald on it, which I found very strange. Another idea. This is interesting because previously Megan Fox said this about Machine Gun Kelly. She said, instead of a soulmate, a twin flame is actually where a soul has, like, ascended into a high enough level that it can be split into two different bodies at the same time. So we're actually two halves of the same soul, I think. And I said to him almost immediately, because I felt it right away. Right? And while that sounds very romantic, the idea of twin flames is also very occult in nature, because it goes back to the idea of soulmates. And I know what you're saying. You're probably like, you know, Isaac, you're a real bummer tonight. You're a real bummer. You're killing the idea of a soulmate. Maybe you and your squirrel think you're soulmates. And look, here's the thing. I mean, A, what do I know? And B, I'm not opposed to some of these thoughts, right? The only one I'm opposed to is making sexy time in the swamp to bring demons in. That's all. That's my only beef. Let's cut it short at that, right? Now, there's a Now, for the soulmate talk, let's refer again to another book by Mark Booth. This book is called The Secret History of the World, on my recommended reading list that I'm still compiling. And here's my notes. This is my paraphrase. If you go to chapter 19, the author is saying that the first time people believed that people could fall in love at first sight was in 1274. It wasn't even that recent. So yeah, that's an idea that's only been around 800 years, apparently. But it's when Dante, from Dante's Inferno, fell in love with Beatrice. Now, Dante's Inferno is interesting because we talked about, oh, what was that movie by Lars von Trier? Oh, dear. The House that Jack Built. That's what it was called. The House that Jack Built by Lars von Trier. We talked about it because it had some elements of Dante's Inferno on there. And it was a pretty cool movie. If you're into really grotesque, horrific, almost unwatchable horror. Very disturbing. One of the most disturbing movies I've ever seen. And I did two shows breaking it down about a year ago. You can find it on the feed. But anyway, back in the day, Dante from Dante's Inferno fell in love with Beatrice. And this was important to the history of the occult, because to them, this is historical truth. And that's what fed into the idea today of people falling in love and finding their soulmates. Because I guess, you know, back in the day, it would be like, you got married off by this family, needed this family to get some cows to milk or whatever. And this family had a nice pasture. But all of this derives from Islam and its occult practices of Sufism, when the Sufi mystics would enter into these altered states. That's where they came up with this idea. And this whole concept of falling in love was first filtered through the occult mystery schools back in the 12th centuries, right? And this is where you get the troubadours who are reciting these, you know, poems of chivalry and love on various levels. Because again, the main idea to always take away is that in the world of entertainment, you've got messages being told to us over and over. And the messaging is basically a ritual. Everything's a ritual on a stage, everything. Especially to these occultists. So the troubadours, they would have literature with these concepts of falling in love and the soulmate, and they would use symbols of initiation like the rose, which was also used in Sufism as a representation of the entrance to the spiritual world. And it was an allegory for the chakra system, like unlocking the kundalini spirit. I know we're probably going deeper than you want to go. And then we could also talk about the Rosicrucians, right? The rosy cross, which is what basically set America up. Francis Bacon's New Atlantis, which is America. Anyway, so in this book, he claims that at this point, when the troubadours and the story of Dante and Beatrice falling in love at first sight, all of humanity transitioned into a whole new phase of consciousness. And people started referencing, and you know, the term making love. That's where this comes from, according to Mark Booth, who seemed like a pretty smart guy. I don't know. I mean, this is just what I'm reading. And Dante's Inferno is a tale that shows that we're all connected. Things we do in this life will carve out a path on the other side as well. So you can see how this fits into Kenneth Grant's belief of the dark side, the shadow side of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. And, you know, it talks about how the nine circles of the underworld, hell, are also found in the cosmos, as above, so below, according to this, right? We create our own heaven and hell. Things we think will materially alter the universe, that's magic. And it talks about how in the Renaissance, artists were conveying these visions they were taking of the spirit world and so on. Oh, and then one last note, which I found was very curious because it fits into this whole thing. It says, learning is a process of remembering. Everything experienced in history lives in an eternal cosmic mind, which is a lot like the Akashic Record that Helena Blavatsky was always talking about. So when Megan Fox says, and I quote, "And just as in every lifetime before this one, and as in every lifetime that will follow it," I said, yes. Tell me she's not employing some of these ideas. And look, I'm not trying to pick on Megan Fox and Machine Gun Kelly. I love that they're in love. I love love, right? You know this. When I did my now 5 episodes of Matrix talk, I said it's a love story. In fact, Vanilla Sky, by the second greatest actor of all time, Tom Cruise. It's a love story, and it's beautiful, and it's great. I've been wanting to watch The Notebook lately. That's how much I love love. So I'm not trying to pick on them. I don't even know that they would be involved with this kind of stuff. Are they doing tantric sex in the caves to make contact with demons on the other side of the Kabbalistic tree of life? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. All I know is that there's a lot of occult ideas present in this simple event. But it's a big event. Everyone's talking about it, right? So let's put it through this filter of occult symbolism. Now, in conclusion, let's take a critical look here. Are these guys occultists? Let's look at Megan Fox. Says she was apparently raised Pentecostal, and she currently even has Christian beliefs. I read this interesting quote from her, an interview she did with Esquire. Says, "I have seen magical, crazy things happen. I've seen people be healed. Even now in the church I go to during praise and worship, I could feel that I was maybe getting ready to speak in tongues, and I'd have to shut it off because I don't know what that church would do if I started screaming out in tongues in the back. It feels like a lot of energy coming through the top of your head. I'm going to sound like such a lunatic, and then your whole body is filled with this electric current, and you just start speaking, but you're not thinking because you have no idea what you're saying. Words are coming out of your mouth and you can't control it. The idea is that it's a language that only God understands. It's the language that's spoken in heaven. It's called getting the Holy Ghost." Now, that's very interesting because I read a book by Father Seraphim Rose, this Orthodox monk. I usually keep it handy, actually. I forget the name of it, man. It's like Orthodoxy and the New Age or something. I should know. I did a whole book club on it. it's funny. I used to be a little more regular at the church, at the Greek Orthodox church there. And we would do book clubs. And we would always go through these books that were, I don't know, kind of like written by monks, for monks, talking about all these things you're supposed to do as a good Christian or whatever. And I'd always be like, oh my gosh, this is a real bummer. And then I got to choose a book. So I did Seraphim Rose's book, Orthodoxy and the Religion of the Future. That's what it's called. I knew it would come to me. And it's all about the occult and aliens and science fiction and how the nerds are going to kill us. So it's curious because he actually talked about this in his book. He talked about people speaking in tongues and how, like, really that's like the devil. Because his whole stance was, and it's extreme, right? It's an extreme stance. But he's like, look, if you're not Orthodox, you're not Christian. You're doing it wrong. You played yourself. That's what he says, right? And he claims that because I like to believe that many of us can find our path to God in many different ways. I have a hard time believing that God's going to be like, no, you're doing it wrong. You're supposed to be the Orthodox flavor. You chose the evangelical flavor or whatever, right? I have a hard time believing that. But he claims, and it's a decent logic, he's like, look, The Orthodox goes all the way back to the apostles. This was the original idea. And don't ask me how they prove this. I don't know, right? But the Orthodox is, in fact, like the first set-up church. And he says, the more we sort of open up to other ideas, the more you're watering down Christianity and what it really means to be a Christian. And eventually you dilute something so much that it's no longer there. He says that's what the devil's trying to do. He's trying to dilute out true Christianity and the true faith. Now, that's like a pretty hardcore stance, right? Anyway, he talks about the Pentecostals in the book, if I recall, and speaking in tongues. And it's curious because she's talking about the energy coming through the top of the head and the body filled with electric current. And it's funny to add into this conversation. I think I've mentioned this before. But one of my counselors, he's like mega woke, right? Like he's been to India, he's been to ashrams, all kinds of stuff. And he was always talking to me about tantric stuff. And he told me that he was able to successfully unlock his kundalini, the serpent. That's like the chakra system inside. When you unlock all the way up, it's like when you at the fair when you take a hammer and hit the thing with the lights and it goes all the way to the top. That's how you unleash the kundalini. You hit the fair hammer till it goes up to the top of your head. But that's how he explained it. He said it felt like a lightning bolt coming out of the top of his head. Anyway. So, I don't know. Is Megan Fox, is she part of this? I don't know. I mean, she says she's got Christian beliefs, but if you go to some of the hardcores like Father Seraphim Rose, he would say, no, she's possessed by the demons. So let's look at Machine Gun Kelly. Is he behind the Hindu Kali occult magic symbolism here? I think we need to revisit the Eminem beef, first off. Because if you recall, back in like 2012, Machine Gun Kelly made a comment about Eminem's daughter being hot. She was 16 at the time, and it really pissed Eminem off. Or so the story goes. And you know, it's hard to know how much of this stuff is manufactured. Anyway, I feel like all these diss things, like the only real diss ever that happened was between Tupac and Biggie. I feel like that was the only real one, and everything since then has been for show? I don't know, maybe not. What do I know? Anyway, Eminem, he releases this diss track called Not Alike. Machine Gun Kelly responds. He makes a song called Rap Devil, a mockery of Eminem's rap god. Then, which of course, we're going to talk about all the symbolism that Machine Gun Kelly uses to associate himself with Satan or the devil. Then Eminem releases Kill Shot. And you know, it's funny because I actually thought Rap Devil, I think it was Rap Devil. Yeah, I actually thought Rap Devil was like probably the best track out of all those, to be honest. And look, Eminem's probably the greatest lyricist to ever rap. But you know my feelings about Eminem. His first two albums were fire. He was so funny and so witty. Then after that, like, not to say that they're bad quality or nothing. I mean, the dude can throw down some lyrics, especially like on Rap God. It's like unbelievable. The dude's insane. But for me, my personal preferences and flavors, like, I'm just kind of, I like the first two. I think it was Relapse when he did the Jamaican voice. I loved that. Everyone hated it, though. Anyway. I thought Machine Gun Kelly had the best track out of those. But people loved Kill Shot. They thought that was the best. And I was like, okay, well, fair. And then to put a bow on it, you know, Machine Gun Kelly, I guess, gave up or something after Kill Shot or said he had nothing left or whatever. And then Eminem had a track called Unaccommodating where he said, and I quote the lyrics here, "But when they ask me, is the war finished with MGK? Of course it is. I cleansed him of his mortal sins. I'm God and the Lord forgives. Even the devil worshipers. I'm moving on, but you know your scruples are gone when you're born with Lucifer's horns." So, I mean, he's basically calling him a devil worshiper. What's going on there? What's going on behind the scenes? Is MGK worshiping the devil? I certainly don't know. It says on his bio he was raised by Christian missionaries, but you know how that goes usually. It's like Sam Tripoli talks about with politics. You know, hippies raise Republicans and conservatives raise liberals or whatever, you know, which is true a lot of the times. Then in 2019, Machine Gun Kelly released an album called Hotel Diablo. Again, another reference to the devil. Listen to this. This is kind of interesting. He said this. He said, to me, and the reason it's patched in on the back of my head and tattooed there is because Hotel Diablo, it was inside my head. The real you is never the perfect side of you. The real you is the honest side of you. And my honesty in going through my earlier years and in my 20s, it was dark. I subconsciously wanted that as the cover the whole time because I was confronting my childhood problems on this album for the first time ever. So I don't know. I mean, if you ever follow my talks about symbolism, I talked about it in The Dark Path a lot. I talked about it in a podcast I did, my other podcast, Breaking Social Norms. I did two shows on symbolism. And just this month, right, January, there's a lot of talk about Sigmund Freud, Carl Jung, and modeling the mind and the shadow, which is something that Kenneth Grant got into a lot. Shadow is the seat of creativity. And again, it's all about making contact with the dark side of the Kabbalistic tree of life. So what's Machine Gun Kelly got going on here? He's alluding to the idea of the shadow, which is a lot like, if you listen to my January 2020 episodes on Kobe Bryant, I read his children's books that he wrote. Obviously, after he died, I didn't care to read them before that, right? But the books, he talks about employing this dark shadow. And the one even came from this fallen angel. It's insane. If you haven't listened to those two shows, you got to listen to them. Maybe it was one show I did on the occult kids books. But then there was another book about his death that was really weird. Really weird stuff. Anyhow, to wrap it up, in 2021, a few months ago, Machine Gun Kelly got a tattoo with Travis Barker on his forearm, and it says Born with Horns, which is going to be the name of their new album, right? So, I mean, how many references to the devil have we talked about with Machine Gun Kelly? So, I don't know. In double conclusion, to wrap this whole thing up, you know, and to be fair, I've got biases here. I enjoy Machine Gun Kelly's music, but I always separate the art from the artist, always. Because look, if you want to have that higher or holier than now attitude, then you better turn that Michael Jackson off. You better turn that Thriller album off. And that's a whole thing. You know how mad people get at me? Look, just because I say I think Michael Jackson did those things to the kids, I feel like he did. That's just my opinion. I clearly wouldn't know for sure. But you wouldn't believe how much grief I get for saying that. In fact, I'll get a lot of grief right now for saying it, I'm sure. Is a grown-ass man with a choo-choo train in his backyard and having sleepovers with boys in his bed. What do you think he was doing? Would you let your neighbor do that? Would you let your kid stay with your neighbor if he had a choo-choo train and was like, these kids are going to sleep in my bed? Hell no, you wouldn't. But that's the thing. Oh, that's the dirty little... Everyone wants this double standard for Michael. You know? Every conspiracy theorist is like, all these pedos everywhere, rotten hell. You know, they'll burn Tom Hanks and they don't even know if he really did anything. But not a peep about Michael Jackson. Because they don't like what that means. And my whole thing is, you got to separate the art from the artist. We all fall short of the glory of God. We all have problems. You know, the guy have problems? I got a whole gang of problems. I'm very cancelable. So I'm not advocating to cancel these guys. I don't know if they're Illuminate confirm. All I know is what I'm reading here. And it seems very weird that she's talking about magic and sacrifice, kind of. and Hindu concepts and the idea of soulmates. And then to wrap it all up, talking about drinking blood. And then they've got this sort of strange past. So I don't know. What you tell me what you think. I'll post links to this stuff, and you can tell me on the social medias. Hopefully you're following me on all the socials. Link in the show notes. Hit me on whichever one you like. You can hit me on Facebook. I never get on there. I literally never get on there. So tell me what you think. Tell me if you think Michael Jackson... Just kidding. Don't start that. That's going to start a whole can of worms with the Michael Jackson stuff. All right. Well, thanks for listening. Oh, and I still got some of these 70s Ringer shirts, right? Off the hook. Hit my Gumroad store, gumroad.com/IsaacW. Link in the show notes where you can get some Ringer t-shirts. What else do I got to peddle? Oh, till January 31st. You get in the VIP section for $2. Go to IlluminatiWatcher.com, hit the VIP, and you're going to see you'll get two books, The Dark Path, Kubrick's Code. You'll get a 2.5-hour documentary I made on Kubrick's best movies, The Shining, Eyes Wide Shut, Clockwork Orange, 2001 Space Odyssey. And you'll get all my podcast episodes ad-free. You'll get over 100 bonus episodes I've done over the years that the free feed losers don't get. Just go to the VIP section on IlluminatiWatcher.com, type in the promo code No More Losers, and you'll get tier one access for all those things for $2 for 2 months. What a deal. What a guy. All right, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Till next time, stay woke.